Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Continuing our run through Star Trek Discovery. Right now, we're up to the episode called Saints of Imperfection. It is the fifth episode of the second season, aired on February 14th, 2019, written by Kirsten Bayer, directed by David Barrett. In this episode, Burnham and the crew navigate a dangerous alien landscape in a race against time to save Tilly's life, but Stamets is not at all prepared for what they may find in the process. Section 31 is assigned to help track down Spock, much to Pike's dismay. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
Good. Looks like we found out why they didn't use Culver as the ghost.
And what would that be? Because they were saving him for this exciting moment?
Yeah, I guess so.
They had to go back.
No, I would argue you behind. Could do both.
I would think, but, so.
Yeah.
We've taken
honestly,
an extra
it might
day.
Make more sense if you do both.
Yeah. We've taken an extra day. We're not recording this on a Friday. We're recording on a Saturday. I've watched this twice because before we go to the break, I'll just say I didn't know what to think about this episode the first time I watched it.
Same. I had the same response.
It was the only episode of this season so far that I wasn't pretty confident in what I felt about it. And if I've rewatched other ones in the past, it's really just to sort of remember details as opposed to like try to sort out what I think about it. But this one, I had no obvious reaction. I thought it came away a little bit positive, and then I started thinking about it, and I don't know where I really stand at this point. I do think it's a very prototypical. Maybe prototypical isn't the right word, but it's a very typical example of the show, I think, at this point. So we're going to, my conversation for this is probably going to be less about the actual episode and more about the meta commentary around it because we'll see, but we'll get into it. I'm going to take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back. We're going to break down Saints of Imperfection.
Words define who we are. Officer. Orphan. Widower. Shipmate. But there is no word for the unique agony of uncertainty.
Okay, Clay. So, to kick this off, I will let you know why I find this show difficult to watch and that is on a level of just my enjoyment factor of watching it.
I spend too much time crying because of all the emotion.
That's true. I'm very dehydrated. I have to have like an IV put in. My wife is a nurse, so she just runs me a saline line right into me. But the thing about it, I wouldn't say this is a terrible show. I think it has improved substantially since its first season. I think that there are places that you could go if you had a lot of time with it, that you could really develop things. I think it has some fundamental problems. However, I get no joy from watching the show. And mostly, I think it all stems down to what I think is the real fundamental point of this episode, which is that the show relies so heavily on bait and switch writing that nothing you watch can be believed that it's going to amount to anything. Like it's very unsatisfying. Nothing. You know that the writers are going to toy with you and flip something around after they give you something. And this one, this is probably the fourth episode in the row that they've been like, oh, we've got Spock. Here's Spock. He's going to beam aboard. Oh, it's someone else. It's not Spock at all. In this case, it's Georgiou appears.
That one, I can't really give them too much crap for that. Cause I mean, that's the thrust of the season, isn't it? It's like, well, we think we have Spock up. We didn't get Spock yet. I mean, that's just how the story's been going.
How many times are you going to go back to that well? Are you going to do this until we run into him? Like, at a certain point, why have it be a mystery? Because it's not a mystery that sticks around with you in any sense. And I think that the other bigger point is that death is largely meaningless in this universe. So playing on the emotion of the episode opens with like a eulogy for Tilly and
that was real weird.
So, I mean, but that's the kind of thing. It's like, it's playing on this thing that is, it wants you to believe is real, but it's just going to pull the rug out from under your feet. And I don't find it very satisfying to watch. I find it sort of frustrating because nothing that you're watching to get to the end result ends up mattering to you because they're going to flip it on you to whatever that they want it to be going forward.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem with it is, tangential to what you're talking about, is there's so much manufactured emotion that they do not earn whatsoever. Like the voiceover that opens and closes this episode, I don't even know what the fuck she's talking about and how it has any relation to anything that's happened in this episode. But like they present it in such this grandiose, melodramatic way that like by the end of the episode, I was like, this feels like the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It was one of those grand season ending things talking about the ethos of everything. And I'm like, this doesn't have anything to do with anything we just watched, really. At least I didn't think it did.
No, the ending the ending one was written to tie into the faith versus reason argument that seems to be the general theme of the season, even though I don't think it really had much to do with the episode in itself.
Yeah. I mean, that was the most tenuous of connections. But yeah, I think they just, it's, I agree with what you're saying. I think so much of the drama and the emotional stuff is so manufactured, and some of the stuff I don't have problems with in as a concept, like you were saying about the, oh, they can never quite catch up with Spock. That's fine. Like I said, that's just how they're telling the story. But the bait and switch of it comes when they're not entirely honest as to what happens before the bait and switch. So, for instance, when they come upon Spock's shuttle, why is Georgiou acting the way she is?
Trying to evade them, you mean?
Yeah, and then like firing weapons and setting off, you know, hydrogen clouds and shit like that. Secondly, at what point did Spock leave that shuttle? Because the Discovery has been chasing him for the past 3 episodes, and they more or less know where he's been going. At what point did that shuttle become adrift, and did Georgiou get onto it? Like, I mean, it's a detail thing that probably doesn't really matter, but it's like, what if the whole thrust of your series so this season is trying to find Spock and chasing him? There's this big section of time that they reveal after Georgiou gets off the ship that, oh, he hasn't been there for a while. Right. I've been driving the ship. Like, I don't know. It's just the way that they present that opening scene with the way that she's handling the ship makes it feel disingenuous when it shows up to be her and she's like, yeah, I've just been driving this for a while for no real reason. Or I mean, she's been trying to track him or whatever, but it's like, I don't understand. It's that thing we were talking about previously where they do a scene where they're like, it's the Enterprise. All of her life support systems are dead, or the only thing left working on the Enterprise is life support systems. Oh my God, we can't talk to anybody. What's going on? And then all of a sudden they're just on the ship and they never talk about it again.
Yes.
It's like they manufacture the drama for that scene, but then as soon as the scene's over, it just doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. They got your blood pressure up, but you know, they don't really do the work as to why that works.
No. And I guess you could say that with the, it kind of would have been neat to see how Spock deceived Georgiou scene. You know what I mean? Like if Spock's the ultimate logical creature, to see him sort of set a trap where he can get out of it and it fools them and he gets away and leaves the shuttle behind and everything. They're not going to do that because they're not going to show you Spock until that point, but,
or at least have her say that.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's an instance where I'd be fine with her being like, yeah, we were tracking Spock, and then he gave us the slip. Not just like, oh, his ship has been adrift for a while.
Right. And here I am, giving the little thing a test drive. Yeah, I think that, I don't know. I think that what I really liked about this episode is that the some of the visual stuff they were doing, I think, is pretty fantastic at this point.
Yeah,
the ship in the Spore Network is kind of cool to watch. The Spore Network itself is fine. It's very Panther world and Black Panther, which we just like the afterlife of the Black Panther. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to that.
I will say the way that the ship gets into the Spore world is one of the most unintentional, hilarious things they've ever done, though, where it's like they rev up the engine and then they immediately drive into a tree.
It's that scene from Wet Hot American Summer where the kid's driving the van and he's just all of a sudden just goes, oh fuck, and he crashes into the car or the tree. It's very much
that. But yeah, I thought the moving, I mean, I think that's what made me so conflicted about how to really think about this episode, because there was so much stuff in it that I didn't love, but the more action-y bits I actually kind of enjoyed. Like that, the whole sequence with the as the ship is being eaten and everything's kind of like pressing in on the crew. I thought that stuff was great.
Yeah, yeah.
The bridge scene, the tension where was good.
The bubble comes in on the bridge and they're sort of looking at it. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, that stuff was great. The tension was really good. Like, to the point, I thought the tension in that stuff was so good to the point that when there's a certain point after they find Culber where they just stop to talk about it for a while, where they're just like, they're on a ticking clock trying to get back because the ship is being eaten. And they like stop and they're like, huh, you know what must have happened? Is I think when he was done, like they're going through this thing, and I literally yelled at the TV, get off the fucking ship!
Yeah, right.
Like, and I wasn't doing that out of like the tension was so well manufactured. It was like frustration. It was like it was so frustrating because like there was no, on one hand you have this ticking time bomb of the ship being destroyed, and then the inside is just business as usual because people gotta talk about shit.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's
explain that shit when you get off the ship. I don't know.
Take a breather after you've been done. Yeah, I think that it's a difficult but interesting episode to sort of like sort your way through, because I think that the other kind of aspect to it is I don't even know if it would probably be a little bit of a disjointed conversation, but like Ash Tyler coming back is very strange to me. Like he can just, his whole escape in episode 3 was dependent on him being dead. And now, now he's just freely hanging out with everybody and to a point where he was a main driving villain in season 1. And when he walks onto the bridge, people just kind of give him like a, huh? Like what's he doing back on the ship?
He's part of Section 31, which is a super secret black ops organization that everybody apparently knows about.
Yes. I mean, we haven't gotten to Section 31 in DS9 yet. And on DS9, they are a 3-episode arc, I think. They're not very prominent. They are more probably well known and sort of spoken about than they actually appear in any of the Trek shows. They're odd. And I think that another unsatisfying thing for me about the show is how they write. We were talking about this before we started recording. If this was a non-Star Trek show, it would fall into the Prisoner remake problem that we had when we watched the Prisoner remake. Watching the Prisoner remake depends on you being familiar with the source material. Yeah. And if you're unfamiliar with the original Prisoner show and you watch the remake, it probably makes very little sense to you because they just take for granted the fact that you understand it.
I'll be honest. I'm very familiar with the show, The Prisoner, and that show didn't make any sense to me. So
it's the same thing for here. If you were, I would love to be watching this one with someone who is totally unfamiliar with Star Trek and to ask their opinion of what they think about Section 31, not just in terms of like, so this person would be ignorant to the lore of Section 31. Why do they exist in this show, first and foremost? Like, what are they doing? They exist solely to track down Spock, kind of like that feels like a weird, what they feel like is a pointless creation that you would add into the series. And it doesn't make sense why a whole department would be after Spock or why there's this need for them, because the main crew is already searching for Spock at this point. So bringing in another agency that's going to work with them, it feels redundant. It feels very silly. They're only doing it because fans of the series know Section 31. And if you know Section 31, the other thing that the show has accomplished is that they don't make any sense in this series as to why they're doing what they're doing. We can't really talk about that until we get to DS9. I will just say, I'm talking a lot, but I have some sort of weird floaty thoughts about this. This is what Section 31 is in this episode. Imagine if we made a movie about the Osama bin Laden raid, right? Where the SEALs Team 6 went into Islamabad and sort of hunted down Osama bin Laden and killed him. Imagine we made that movie, right? And we're leading into helicopters down, SEAL team is going in there, they're taking out the guards, they break into his house, they see his wives and everything. Osama bin Laden appears at the top of the stairs, like they say that he did, and one of the SEAL team members draws his gun and he's got his bead on him, right? He's about to pull the trigger. Another SEAL member comes over and says, you can't kill him because you'll be charged with murder. You'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like the whole point of this operation is to kill him, You know what I mean?
Right.
Section 31 exists. There's a line at the end here. You'll be court. Leland tells Georgiou, you'll be court-martialed if this happens. Section 31 does not care about court-martials. That's the whole point of their organization. So it'll be tough for you to respond to that, but that's like the inconsistency that I see here. You're neither playing to the new fan, nor are you fleshing out an existing property for fans in a way that makes any sense.
Well, I think I know why Section 31 is here, regardless of whether or not they're being used correctly. It's because the driving plot of the season is Discovery trying to find Spock, right? So as they get closer, you need something else to boost that story. Otherwise, you're just following a breadcrumb trail. And they're obviously, you know, we've been getting pieces as it goes along. First, it's, oh, Spock is missing. And then it's, oh, Spock killed three people. Mm-hmm. And then, so now you've got to the point where you have to up the stakes. So you bring in Section 31, who are also going after Spock, but they're going after Spock because they're, you know, you're not supposed to trust them, essentially.
Right.
And so you've got a contrasting force that is going after him, probably to kill him. And so that creates tension where now it is a race between the two of them to get there.
Yes.
I don't know if that's totally, at least that's what they imply at the beginning. I don't really know if that's how it stands at the end, because they seem to be on pretty good terms by the end of it.
the Leland apologizes to Pike. He's like, I was kind of a dick back there to you, Christopher Pike. And then he accepts it.
And also, was the Admiral on that ship the whole fucking time?
Was that a hologram or was she on the ship?
It didn't look like a hologram.
Okay.
She wasn't like wavy and blue. She was looked pretty solid.
Yeah, I don't.
That's the one thing, you know. I've gotten over, you know, my big thing from last season was, where the fuck is the ship?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother me as much this season because they have a goal that they are moving towards.
Yeah, I feel so like you understand really, that they're on the move and they're right. Sort of moving around. Yeah.
But what does still present a problem that they don't ever talk about is how people who are not on this mission get to the fucking ship.
Yes.
Like, I don't think we mentioned it in the last episode or whenever it was, but when Number One shows up, where the fuck did she come from? Because they're like in the middle of deep space trying to find Spock, and then the Number One from the Enterprise just happens to catch up with them.
Yes, on a shuttle.
And in this one, the Admiral's on the fucking Section 31 ship. Was she there the whole time? Just hanging out, like eating chips while they were pulling the Discovery out of the mycelial network or something. I don't understand, especially in this situation where if she's not going to play a part in the proceedings, just make her a fucking hologram.
Right. Yeah.
Like, why does she need to be there in person?
I have no good answer for that. I don't know why she would need to be there.
I think, I'm sorry, we're kind of getting off into little nitpicky shit, but I mean, nitpicky, but like, it's nitpicky, but it's like, come on, guys. At the end of the episode, yeah, Section 31 and Discovery seem to be kind of like cool with each other. I mean, it's not total. I guess I should, let me rephrase that. There is not that feeling of we need to get to Spock before Section 31 does, as much as there was at the beginning.
No,
I guess the thing that they're trying to imply is that maybe having Ash on the ship again. Are they trying to recreate this? Well, I guess you don't even need to recreate it, but are they supposed to make the rest of the crew suspicious of Ash? Is that his name Ash? It is.
Yes, right? Ash Tyler, yeah.
Suspicious of him by the fact that he is who he is, and he's in Section 31, and now he's stuck on Discovery. So is that supposed to be like, oh, he's, you know, was this guy going to be the bad guy or not?
I don't know why he's there at all, really. He seems like the worst agent to send over in that case.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me to really sort of wrap my hands around that whole thing. But their relationship with Section 31 is friendly from the start. He and Leland and Pike know each other. They're familiar with each other for some reason. And they have a weak hint at some sort of tension where Pike says, is that a threat? And he says something. He has some response to him. But by the end of it, the Admiral is chastising them, telling them to work together, and they agree to work together with each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
and they apologize to each other.
Yeah, they apologize. And I'm not going to get too into the weeds about why this doesn't make sense for Section 31.
I don't think we need to worry about that.
Section 31, just for your benefit, feels very much like the Spore Drive. They're going to have to do something drastic to bring it into continuity with the rest of the shows. So we'll see what they do with that. But I think that Section 31, to me, outside of the chase thing, where I was really enjoying the early episodes of the season where each, like, the chase was happening, but we were having little adventures along the way. And you're telling me that Section 31 is there to add a little bit of a race factor with the Discovery, which we both agree is maybe not really happening all that well. To me, it feels very strongly that they're trying to spin this off. Like, they're like, here, we'll develop them here and push them into something. That's why we're going to bring back Ash Tyler. That's why we're going to have George Al. That's why we're going to do all these things. And they don't feel like they belong there. They feel like they're really just doing an extended goodbye so that they can kick off and do their own show at some point.
Yeah. No, I mean, the episode where they introduced them, that's 100% how it felt. Like, by the end, when Ash ends up with Section 31, it felt like, oh, this is like a backdoor pilot for a Section 31 show. Which, honestly, I don't know if I wouldn't hate that. I mean, if they were kind of off doing their own thing, I would watch that show. Sure. I think Ash has potential as a character. I think George Yao is fine. And I think, you know, doing that sort of Black Ops Star Trek thing is it allows you to make some interesting characters if they choose to do so. But yeah, I don't know. They feel a little bit forced into this. Not to mention the other, I mean, I don't want to get too much into technology shit again, because I don't know how to reconcile it anymore. Because you've got, on the one hand, you've got them trying to make things fit by having Pike say, we're only using view screens on the Enterprise. But then at the same time, you've got the Section 31 ship that not only can cloak itself, but it can turn itself into a fucking asteroid.
Asteroid, yeah.
Like, I know it's a hologram or whatever, but I mean, no other ship in the Federation has ever been able to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or will ever be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, would you classify that as a cloaking device? I was wondering if you would technically, if that was a cute little way to get around the fact that they're not supposed to be using cloaking technology, if it's like, well, I mean, you can still see us, but we look like something else.
It would have to be a cloaking device, because the Discovery never picks them up.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And the whole point is to hide.
Like, why even bother doing that instead of... I can't remember. Do cloaking devices exist yet in this point? I thought only the Romulans had them. Or whatever. I can't remember.
Yes, the Romulans would have them. I don't think the Klingons do, because season one of Discovery has them cloaking. So the Klingons
have them as well. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it does exist, but none of them turned into giant fake rocks, though. I don't know. It's just you're adding so much stuff that, again, wouldn't be a problem. I guess it depends on how much you care about it. Because, like, you wouldn't be a problem if this took place in the future. No. But is it really a problem now, unless you're, you know, hosting a Star Trek podcast where people care about this shit? And that's not even talking about the communicator badge, which I actually kind of liked. But because I'm a sucker for the communicator badge. But
how they reveal that it's Section 31 technology, the new
communicator. Yeah, I kind of, that was the one of those winks that I actually enjoyed, where he hits the thing and then Pike's like, what the hell was that?
Pike, Anson Mount as Pike continues to be the sort of funny character who comments on everything that's going on. Like, he can't believe there's a scene where...
That whole sequence was awesome, because it was the communicator, then the ship, and he's like, we are going to have to sit down and have a talk about what exactly is happening here when this is over.
There's a scene where he and Burnham go in and they see Ash Tyler, a very weird sequence where they see Ash Tyler, he's sitting alone in the cafeteria, and the camera never shows you that it's him. You just have to buy into the fact that Burnham sees him. They have a scene where Pike says something.
Sorry, can I talk about that for 1 second?
Yeah, go ahead.
That quick scene. Because they have a little scene there between the two of them. When
Burnham and Pike, or who?
Burnham and Pike.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know, you got to tell me what's going on, because the way you reacted when George Al came on the ship and the way you reacted just now when you saw Ash Tyler tells me there's something up. And I understand why they write that, but on the flip side, of course she's going to act that way. He knows what fucking Ash Tyler did.
Yeah.
Like, why is there any, well, anybody should react that way to seeing, there should be no one in that cafeteria. He should not be sitting in the cafeteria in general population by himself.
I was more distressed by that sequence where he goes, tell me what's going on with this and why are you acting this way? And she goes, I can't tell you now, I'll tell you later. And he goes, okay. And then just walks off.
Yeah, that he's, too, yes.
He's the captain of this ship on this sort of life or death mission, and he's dealing with a black ops crew that's sort of positioned against him, and he doesn't care to know what the information is for the rest of it. It made me just think of Pike as sort of this like happy-go-lucky idiot who's just kind of wandering around as stuff is happening around him.
At the same time, though, he does... I did like the way that he interacts with Leland. Is that his name?
Yeah, Leland.
When they show up, when, you know, he was you know, putting his foot down about stuff when Leland was trying to pull him out of the network. And I still think he's the best character on the show.
Well, yeah.
Best is maybe a stretch, but I think he's the most engaging one this season.
I think he's the most consistent. And he has a role that's not really prominent, but he sits comfortably where he needs to be. But to get back to my point, their scene with each other was funny because... The Pike is sort of pointing out the funniness of stuff where he says something to Burnham and Burnham goes, well, he wasn't Voke then, he was Ash Tyler and it's a different person. And Pike just kind of looks at it, he's like, even if I could understand what the fuck you were telling me right now, like trying to sum up whatever the Ash Voke relationship is, he's like, I'm going to forgive that and move on with it. He's very good at that sort of role, pointing out the funniness of stuff, even if I don't know if it's intentional half the time.
Yeah, I feel like the thing that's making him come across so strongly, actually, is he's the only one to me who seems like his character is actually getting across through the stuff that he does and his actions, as opposed to just talking a lot. Because they have generally not positioned him in a way where he is actively solving the problem the way they do with literally everybody else. And I understand that because, you know, the captain, you got to put him on it. They want the captain to be a little bit more peripheral on the show, which is totally fine. But part of the result of that is that when he does take action, it does feel more honest, as though he's responding to what's being given to him instead of just creating the solution out of nowhere.
Right.
So like they come to him with something and he considers it. And then he's like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And like, you know, even at the beginning sequence, it was a little tiny thing, but you know, the shuttlecraft is going away. They're trying to, you know, catch him or whatever. And he's like, all right, fire a photon torpedo and blow it up 100 meters away from the ship. And that's a pretty ballsy thing to do. Now everyone, so like he gets a couple side eyes about that,
but then,
you know, he does it, and you know, it's his actions, I feel like, speak louder than a lot of other actions on the show. And I don't know if that's because he's so charismatic and charming. I don't know, but I like that character. I think he's been a great addition to the show.
Yeah, I think so. He is, he's well acted. His role as captain makes sense in a way that the other officer's rank doesn't seem to matter at all. He's the decider. He decides what they all do, and him being the captain sort of lends to that. And he's obviously written as a very good manager. He sort of reaches out to everyone else who's under him and sort of looks for the best opinion before he goes on with his decision. And
I'm only saying that I like him because I identify with him as being a dashingly charismatic white man myself.
Yeah, I like Pike, and I think that he works well in the series and what they've asked him. He's actually a bit more backgrounded than I would have expected based on the first couple episodes with him, but he is still prominent.
Yeah, I think they've been using him very well as far as how much and how involved in the story he is and stuff. I like that I actually really like that they positioned him as the one who's kind of got to be like, all right, you've brought a really crazy sounding thing to me. I'm going to trust you that you can get it done, instead of being a point of antagonism.
Yeah. Yep.
For everybody. So I think he's been good.
So let's get into the Spore network itself.
Yeah.
Which is the big,
can I tell you how much I hate May? I hate May.
You hate May? How come you hate May?
I hate May. Because May, this whole episode and everything up to this episode, especially this one though, she felt like the character in a video game side mission who you find on the side of the road in Red Dead Redemption, and she's like, help me, my whole family has been killed by bandits. come with me. And then you have to follow her. And then the only thing that you learn about her is that her family has been killed by bandits and you need to help her.
Sure.
And that's, she just felt like she was only there to service moving that stuff along. So all the stuff that they're doing with, you know, at the end there, when they're like, well, you're part of me, I feel like I've known you my entire, that stuff doesn't, that falls so flat because there's no character there.
Yeah. Yep.
And like, we haven't spent any time with these two people, like getting to know each other. It's like, there's no relationship there.
No, no.
It's all just manufactured because at this point they need to have the dramatic moment. You know, it's not, it's unearned drama. If it was Culver, everything that she says makes way more sense as far as like the emotional beats of it, because you don't need to do that work because that character already exists. And the fact that the dead doctor has come to you to bring you back into the mycelial network to solve this problem generates a lot of internal feelings instead of, you know, creating this shell, which literal shell of a character.
Yeah, he's... I think just so people don't yell at you, I think it's Culber, C-U-L.
Is it with a B? I can't remember. I've seen it written both ways. So
I think it's with a B. I will look through that. It is Culber. It's C-U-L-B-E-R. The Culber thing.
I pronounce all my V's like B's, like in Spanish.
The Culber thing.
And vice versa.
Well, I guess we can, having conversations with people online and Twitter, people were upset that Culber died in the first season. Mm-hmm. And they thought that this is a writer response to the fan reaction about Culber's death. And mm-hmm. I don't know how much that is true, because I seem to remember when he died in season one, the actor was like, I'll see you next year. And like,
he was very coy about the fact that he was not dead.
Right. So I think they had this planned that he was going to come back for this.
Yeah.
And the argument seems to be that killing him, I was of the opinion in the first season that killing him off was basically just the bread and butter of this show, where they're going to do something like that just because they have to do something to push you forward. And mm-hmm. that was an unearned death that was kind of gimmicky and silly because he didn't really need to die, and they just pushed him into the Spore Network so that Stamets could get the answer from him in the first season. We knew mm-hmm. nothing about Culber and Stamets' relationship outside of that one scene where they're brushing their teeth with each other. Mm-hmm. And what's weird about the show is that bringing him back and having that moment where he thinks that he can't go back to his real world existence was genuinely one of the only moments of the show where I actually felt like bad for people.
Yeah.
And they bait and switched you again. They just are like, nope, fuck it. Like, never mind. He's going to actually come back. I would have been so much happier with the storyline if Culber was stuck forever in the Spore Network. And that was just the way of things. Yeah. Like, that's a storyline for him, but he just comes back. He's just back. Now he's here. They're going to resume their relationship. We made his mistake. People didn't seem to like the fact that we killed off one of the gay homosexual characters on the show. So we're going to take that back. Even though I made the joke on Twitter. I think if you had gone through the first season and like had a sneezing fit during their brushing the teeth scene, you might not even be aware that they're a couple. By the end of the season, because they don't share time with each other. There is no development between them. And here, even though I genuinely felt bad just because it was sort of a tragic situation for him, at the end of it, everything's okay. And he's back and he got a clean haircut and he no longer looks insane or anything like that. He's back on the show.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like the Spore Drive version of, well, we brought the other George out back from the other universe, so everything's fine.
Right.
You know, it has the same kind of, I mean, it's a little bit, I'd say it's a little less hacky than that, because there is actually, as well, we don't know this for sure, but as far as we are to believe at this point, it is Culber, the Culber that we knew, who has now been resurrected to an extent, or, you know, reconstituted or whatever.
Right. We have no evidence.
It's not a different character. Yeah. We don't know. I mean, maybe he might turn out to be some weird fucked up version. I don't know. But, but as of right now, it is the same character. So it feels a little less hacky than just creating it. You know, it's not the landfill situation that they had in the first season. Yeah.
And we saw him as a mycelial ghost in the first season. So it's not like they invented this for him to just be existing there. We have seen him there before.
But yeah, I think it is. I think it's really, I don't know. I really didn't like this for the same reasons. It feels gimmicky to kill him. it feels even more gimmicky to bring him back, especially since Stamets hasn't really been doing anything this season so far. He's just been kind of like moping around.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that he's moping around because his husband died, but he hasn't been like actively dealing with this. It's just sort of, this is the part where Stamets goes in and brings him back, and now he's super happy about it. I feel it's really gimmicky, and I also think their use of the laws of thermodynamics to justify this, I don't know anything about them, but even I yelled fuck you at the screen when they explained exactly what happened here.
I shut my brain down for any bit of explanation as to how this all happened. The only thing that I learned on rewatch, I was totally confused by the tree bark stuff the first time I saw this. I had no idea what was going on. And like I thought that the trees were the alien invader that was killing them. And that's not what's happening. Apparently the trees live in the mycelial network, but they're poisonous to the spores. And Culber was just rubbing himself with them so that the spores wouldn't attack him. Mm-hmm. I thought there was something much more insidious than that, but no, Culber is the monster. He is the only monster. And
did you pick that up? I, as soon as they got to mycelial network and she was like, we have to find a monster, I knew exactly what they were going to do.
No, because I was confused thinking that the monster was the tree poison stuff. Yeah. I thought it was an alien life form that had like infected the mycelial network, probably because Discovery's jumping back and forth between it or something. And I, on rewatch, it's obvious that it's Culber that they're talking about. But no, I was totally confused the first time through.
Yeah, it was just like TV logic for me. Where it was like, all right, well, there's a monster here. It means something that doesn't belong here. Stamets is going in. Why did they create this character, this ghost character, instead of using someone with more emotional weight like Culber? Oh, obviously, Culber is stuck in the mycelial network and they're going to get him. That's basically how I pieced it together.
Yep. It goes against our argument in the previous episode. They shot down our point as to why not just have Culber. It's why you have to have May exist.
That's what I was saying at the beginning. I kind of think you still could have done both. I mean, it probably wouldn't have been worked the same way, but I don't know. I still think it's, I don't know. It feels cheap to me all around.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel I haven't had a real point of discussion for this conversation that we're having.
Also, like they smash the ship into the mycelial network and then they just like open a door. How the fuck did she get inside the ship?
Who?
Tilly. They just walk up to the ship. They just walk right into the ship.
Don't they? Oh, right. Don't they? They go through the little box to sort of connect the worlds. Is that what they do?
No. I'm talking. Tilly's in the mycelial network.
Yes.
And then they bank the Discovery off into a ditch. And so they have half of the ship sticking into the mycelial network.
Yeah.
And then Tilly and May just walk into the ship.
But no one's there, right?
Yeah, but like, did they open a door for her or something? Why can she just walk up to the exterior of the ship and walk into the ship at any point from the saucer section?
How dare you? This is maybe...
Also, when she gets there, it's like she's right around the corner from where Stamets and Burnham show up. And it was like, oh, we're going in there to find Tilly. Oh, she's right here. It's just, I don't know. I know they had other things to do because the point was to get to Culver and whatnot, but I don't know.
Maybe I think that all just ties into, I didn't even realize that they were running around on the Discovery, I guess, there. Like, what's weird when I'm watching this is my brain is just kind of glazed over at a certain point, and it's like, so what does that mean? Why does the crew disappear when the ship appears in the mycelium? Well, just because they can't go into that section, right?
Yeah, the crew didn't disappear. They moved everybody to a safe section of the ship.
Okay, this is all making. I've watched this episode twice, and I never even thought about this. So that's why they do that. That's why they come on, and they have to go to the box section that they can move between worlds with or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That all makes sense. I think it's just the general problem with it. Like, so much of the details are sort of hung up in the mechanics like that, as opposed to any kind of, like, you feel the episode would really hinge on the Stamets and Culber thing, and it doesn't in a lot of ways. And I apologize because I feel like my conversation has been a little bit off on this one, but I don't know. I don't, it's getting a little bit difficult at this point to really fix my Discovery commentary, because this show is so, I'm done talking about this episode. I think I'm just going to go into like a meta thing about it. But the way that we've done the previous Trek shows, right, where everything has been more episodic than this, you feel like you sort of understand the entirety of something when you're going to talk about the episode. Like you've seen it, you've seen the entire story. And Discovery takes a much more serialized approach to things. And what you end up with is these sort of like little scenes that continue on, and you're not really sure where they're going to build or what they're going to go to. And you end up, just sort of like, there's almost, we were talking a little bit disjointed. We were talking on Discord about this, about like how many bad episodes of TNG and TOS there are. Mm-hmm. And Discovery is a different mode of storytelling. And it's probably why I think that it's not fair to compare Discovery to TOS and TNG and DS9 and Voyager and things. It's much more fair and appropriate, I think, to compare it to modern television shows that are serialized like this, because you can, they're telling the same kind of story. Like they're using the same techniques in a way that the early Trek series really aren't at all. And the thing about Discovery is just that there's never any hope in Discovery at this point that when we watch a bad TNG episode, you always go, well, this next episode is going to be great. There's never this hope that the episode is just going to like flip and become a new thing. Because of the serialized nature of the show, all the episodes become similar to each other. You know, like
it's very tough to pivot.
What's that?
It's very tough to pivot when you're doing it this way.
Right, exactly. And I see very little hope at this point that the next episode, I have very little optimism that the next episode of Discovery will be an A+ episode. You know what
Great
I mean?
Great trailer, though. I thought the trailer for next week's looked pretty cool.
What the hell happens in the trailer? I can't even remember.
It's they're going to Saru's planet dealing with the giant red thing.
And the Ba'ul, the oil creatures. Yeah,
that oil creature was pretty cool. I mean, if Tasha had been killed by that thing, I would have been like, all right, I understand.
But you know what I mean? Like, you just kind of like, after you sink into what a Discovery season is, you just kind of have to expect that for the rest of the season. I think that's another thing that sort of drags me down while watching it, is because there's no hope for, well, this episode was terrible, but the next episode is a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. I think that's a little cynical. Sure. I don't think you're entirely wrong. I understand what you're saying, but I feel like this season has, doing your show like this makes it very difficult to pivot, but it doesn't mean you can't, start tacking your ship in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this season so far has been better than the first one in terms of it has a little bit more focus to it. It still has a lot of the frayed edges that the first one had that I think are dragging it down. But when they focus on the main story that they're telling, it seems to they're doing pretty good. It's not... I'm not going out and really recommending it to anybody, but I'm hopeful that eventually that they will be able to right the ship. Does that mean that I think next week will be a 5 out of 5? No, I mean, because kind of probably for the reasons that you're saying, I've just sort of assumed that's not going to be the case ever. Mm. But I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah. Well,
I think where it becomes very difficult is in a show like this. For a 5 out of 5 episode, you need to have all of your elements like firing on all cylinders, right? And one of the main elements that you really need to pull that off is really strong characters. And I just think that the character work in this show is so sparse. And I don't mean that from the actors. I mean, writing wise, I think the actors are doing fine with what they have, but the building of character relationships is so tenuous, but they keep trying to cash in on it as though we've been living with these characters and seeing them grow for 6 years, that stuff never pays off because it doesn't have the foundation to stand on. So not having that stuff makes it very difficult to really excel when one of your main ingredients is that shaky.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. And I think that it's a, I don't know. I'm just like the problem here to me is why, like, I almost feel like they should have just abandoned the Spore network. The really the worst parts of the season are everything that they're bringing from season one and trying to sort of correct it in a lot of ways, or at least like resolve the issues with it. And I feel maybe it was just better to never go back to the Spore network. Like the Spore world is so odd to me. It just, it fixes a lot of problems. They always have like a solution because of the Spore universe is a little bit different, that we can do this in the Spore world. It doesn't feel like anything's earned from it.
Well, I also don't understand where the Spore universe exists and like the breadth of it or anything, because I don't understand how they can just bank the ship in through a crevice and be 20 yards away from where Tilly is.
Right.
Like, they have some techno babble about him being able to trace the cocoon or some shit. But even there, it's like, what was their plan? Once they get into there, were they just going to walk around in the ship and hope that Tilly was on the ship?
I think so.
Or were they going to leave the ship and walk into the world of the mycelial network and cover however much ground that is to find? Like, I understand.
They had an hour. They had an hour, according to
that. Exactly. So I say that all the time. They have an hour. But at the same time, it's like, it feels so much like they didn't consider some of these connecting tissues. I don't know. Part of me feels like you could have gotten around it if it was, I think they did this in the first season, didn't they? Where it was like a mycelial network flip inversion of the ship. So it was like the same, occupying the same space, but it was in a different dimension or some shit like that.
Sure.
Yeah. So that way she's on the ship. So you just got to find her on the ship.
Oh, right.
That kind of thing. I don't know. It seems like they go so big, but then they don't really always consider, and I should give them the benefit of the doubt that they do consider this stuff, because obviously I don't work in the writing room and I know it's very difficult to write television, and you know, I'm not a professional in any means as far as that goes, but you know, it's some of these jumps, I wouldn't call them plot holes, but like tenuous logic leaps
leap of faith almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is that the theme of the whole second season where they're just like, yeah, it's all about faith versus reason, because we just really want you to just trust us and not worry about it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's it.
Before we wrap up.
Yep.
One thing that I would like to talk about, it's just a tiny little thing, but I've watched the episode twice and I have not been able to figure out what the hell they're talking about. You've also watched it twice. Maybe you caught it.
I missed Burnham, the tree thing. So we'll say, yeah.
Burnham, and if anybody listening can figure this out, please tell me. Burnham and Georgiou have this scene at the very end, right? Where Georgiou is like, oh, you should trust me. I'm, you know, why would I lie to you? Blah, blah, you know, I've held your life in my hands so many times, which also is something that we don't actually know because we've never really seen. But Burnham says something to her where she says, I heard you bought us a few minutes. I can't thank you enough for that. What the fuck is she talking about?
Burnham says that to Georgiou?
Yes. Georgiou is not involved in anything going forward in the story, other than the fact that she gets on the ship, right? So as far as the actual, like, mission that they just completed goes, Georgiou is not involved whatsoever.
I'm trying to think.
So unless they're talking about something else that happened previously that I've completely forgotten about, that line makes no sense. If I'm right, if this line has no connection to anything that we actually saw, I feel like it's a good example of the problem, because you've got this scene where Burnham is talking to Georgiou, coming to her and being like, you know, I was kind of a bitch towards you, but you bought us some time and I thank you for that. And then Georgiou's response is like, yeah, man, you know, I'm going to do that for you. That's why you should trust me. But we don't have anything to base that emotional conflict on in that scene. It's just manufactured, unless I'm completely wrong. I could be completely wrong, but I don't know what she's talking about.
I honestly don't remember.
Because she just, Georgia just is not in the episode after a certain point. No, no. Like once Section 31 shows up, oh, you know what? Okay, I know what it is. I take it back. Erase everything I just said.
What is it? You'll have to remind me.
I still don't know what she did, but it's, I think she's referencing the scene on the Section 31 ship when Georgia is doing something because Leland wants to pull out. And then Georgiou says that shit that I hate where she's like, well, remember that time where you were on that planet and you killed those people? Mm-hmm. And it's and he's like, well, nobody's going to know about that. And she's like, well, I hacked your files. I hate that shit. Because they're talking about stuff we don't know anything about. And yeah. But she must have done something there. That makes sense. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent about that because I missed it. But
that's fine.
But
that's...
even there, the problem is... Whatever she does happens in dialogue, so I don't know what the fuck she did, but right. she somehow stopped the ship from
sinking,
pulling
in.
Them out or something. I don't know. But also, how would Burnham know that? The only person who would know that happened would be her, or would be Georgiou or Leland.
Yeah.
So unless one of them took her aside and was like, by the way, Georgiou bought you some time.
Well, during Leland and Pike's bonding sesh at the end of the episode, maybe he told him back there that something happened.
So anybody who was screaming at their phone or whatever as I was ranting, I apologize.
Let's take a break. We'll play an audio clip. We'll come back and give our final thoughts about this one.
Old friends who don't shake hands.
You're a long way from home, Admiral.
Indeed. Starfleet has new and critical information about the seven signals. The first one that appeared led Discovery to an interstellar asteroid, but by the time you arrived, the signal was gone. We detailed a research vessel to scan for subspace readings, and the findings were unexpected. For a brief window, the signal appears to have left behind a trail of tachyon radiation.
Tachyons? Quantum field like that could imply time travel.
Or it could be the byproduct of cloaking devices or transporters.
You're both right. Or maybe you're both wrong. Either way, the only one with any sort of connection to these signals is Lieutenant Spock. Still a fugitive.
So yeah,
I need both of you to find him. And I need you to help each other.
I'm not sure I really liked it. I'm not sure I hated it. I don't know. It's odd.
I thought it was fine.
You thought it was fine. I feel like I'm having a tremendous amount of difficulty talking about this one. I don't really know why, but it's really just a culmination of everything to this point that the show is. And I guess you just have to go with it at this point. Mm-hmm. And I hope we're almost done with the Spore Network on some level.
I don't think we are. Cause I mean, if they didn't dump it at the end of the first season, it's because that's what the ship does, right? That's the fancy thing the ship does.
Apparently. I know people are saying that on the Discord. I remember the intro of season one being that the Discovery is just a science ship that has a ton of labs on it. Like, I thought that was the design, and they just happened to have built a spore drive for them. But, you know, people like Grim Santo bring up a good point of the saucer spins for the function of the jumping is done by the spinning of the ship. So I don't know, maybe.
Well, I think the whole ship, wasn't the ship designed by Stamets as like a large, as wasn't it sort of built around the concept of the spore drive?
But there are multiple, the Glenn is another version of Discovery, right? So, and there must be a Discovery ship because they always name it after the first ship. So there must be a ship called the USS or whatever the fuck their ship is called. I actually don't know what the ship is called. The class or whatever.
I see.
But yeah. I guess I never interpreted it that way. But I guess you could say that maybe these ships were built for this function alone. Although I always just got the impression it was just a science ship that happened to do things.
Yeah. I mean I don't think there's another ship that does the spore thing.
Well, there wasn't season one because they were the one that had that bad jump where everyone turned out deformed after it was done.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah. And Stamets had that friendly rivalry with the other engineer who died.
Right. That's right. Yeah. But, I mean, it is the fancy thing that the ship does on the show. So I can't really see them ditching it, even though they don't really use it that much anymore, which is like, I mean, at that point, you may as well just get rid of it.
So, well, if it was built for, I guess maybe that I'm digging too deep. So if it was built for the spore drive, why does it have a warp drive on it? I guess would be my point. Like, you know what I mean? It feels like it's a normal ship that they have attached some new tech to. Although spinning undoes that.
Why would you put, you know, NOS boosters on a car? You know, the car still drives without it, but you get that little extra kick if you need it. I think I always assumed that the spore drive was not meant to be the only way it travels.
Yeah, that's fine. It all feels very... I guess it's unimportant. It's interesting to think about, but it's just unimportant in the context of the series. But tough episode to think about. We'll see where the next one goes. I am looking forward to the Saru thing, if the Saru thing is its own little contained episode in the next one, because that is definitely more interesting to me than what the Spore Network is here. And we'll see what Culber comes back and acts like and how they treat him and everything going forward.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. The spore stuff is just so uninteresting to me, because there's not, like, I don't know, there's nothing interesting about that network. Is there anything interesting to that world that they were in, really?
I thought they were going to tie it into the faith versus reason thing by having it be a very strong allegory for heaven. Like, it's an afterlife position. But and that would have, if Culber had been stuck there, it has something to say about moving on with grief from a loved one who you can't bring back. And definitely, it's not. They just pull them back. And they're like, yeah, you're with us now. It's really just this weird... It doesn't even have a gimmick like a mirror universe angle to it. It's like, it's just this weird transitional place where everything glows and it's bad to be there because the spores hurt you.
Yeah, it kind of, I don't know. As I'm thinking about it, there's kind of this weird theme to the episode where they kind of almost... not even subtextually, but textually, talk about how death is reversible.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, everyone's acting like Tilly's dead, and then he's like, well, I think we can probably bring Tilly back. And Pike's like, what? What are you talking about? And then that it continues into when they find Culber. It's like, yeah, he also can come back. it's weird. It feels like that sort of hubris should be, I don't know if hubris is the word, but... that sort of action feels like the natural story end to that is that, no, you can't bring everybody back.
Sure.
There is a certain, you know, like you're saying, it feels like it should have been, it feels more natural, not should have been, I shouldn't say that, but it feels like it would more naturally fits as an allegory for dealing with grief, like you're saying. And then you get to the certain point where, yeah, unfortunately, there are some things that you can't
even science undo. Can't fix. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think that would be the point. And I would have been...
I thought they were going to have him, like, live inside his mind or something like that. I didn't think they were physically going to bring him back.
Culber, you thought they were just going to have him inserted?
I thought it was going to be like a May thing where he was going to be able to connect with Stamets to talk to him or some
shit.
Boy,
I would have hated that thing. I'd prefer they just bring him back at this point. Yeah, and just we'll continue on as if nothing had happened, and that was just a horrible mistake. But yeah, we're done with that episode. We'll be back with the next one, whatever it's called. Yeah. It does have a title, but I don't remember.
Weird talking about it, because like I feel like I couldn't even really focus myself on it, because there was so much stuff that was just sort of like nebulous and hard to grasp onto, like you were saying, that I directed all my anger towards that George Yao thing, and I ended up being wrong about it.
Maybe that's our general problem. Yeah, I just thought it was, there's a tremendous amount going on in this episode, first of all. So I don't know how focused our discussion could have been, but it really is one that... We'll see if it's a pivot point or anything like that. Like I don't know. I feel like we've kind of run out of gas in terms of what we can say about it though. So I guess we'll just wrap it up. But do you have any thoughts for next week?
Well, I was going to say, I do wish the conversation with Burnham and Tyler about how he got off of Kronos, I wish he had been like, it's a long story. It involves a severed infant head. I don't want to get into it right now.
It's still bizarre. Like, how are they going to reconcile that story for Laurel? He's not dead. She didn't kill him. She lied about everything.
Yeah, who cares?
We'll see. What are the odds? Would you bet that Laurel appears in this season again?
How many episodes do we have left?
This is episode 5, so we have 9 left, I think. Nine.
I would say there is a 55% chance we see her again.
Okay.
Only because I'm thinking eventually they have to get to Spock. Eventually. And then I can't wait till they get to Spock and he's like, "You guys came all this way because you found my sweet anime character drawings that I did." But they have to find Spock, and then they have to then address the Red Angel thing. And I can't imagine the Red Angel thing not being some sort of galactic, large-scale issue.
They implied time travel at the end of this episode. Yeah, what does that mean? Interesting. What does that mean?
Well, at the very least, it means I think we're going to get a lot more angry before this season is over. I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Does that mean? I don't know what that means. There was a theory about this. I think that I remember someone bringing.
The all Spock thing.
Yeah, that all the red beacons are Spock from different points in time.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. we'll see.
But yeah, I can't imagine that the Red Angel thing is not going to be a large is it. I imagine it must be a large scale thing that a lot of different cultures will have to deal with. So it wouldn't surprise me if at some point the Klingons do get brought back in.
Oh, I see what you mean. Would you take the over or the under for Seasons of Discovery before it is ended? If I set it at 3.5.
I would say that's probably pretty fair. Although, you know, I thought 24, I didn't think 24 was going to make it past their first season because I didn't understand how you could do that gimmick more than once. Mm. But they made like 15 years out of that shit. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a very expensive show. Just by looking at it, you can tell it's a very expensive show.
Yeah. And then they've built so many other Trek shows at this point that who knows?
I don't know. I mean, I would be, honestly, I would be a little bit more, probably a little bit more kind to it if it did have an end point in mind. Like if they said, we're going to do 3 seasons of this, and at the end of the season 3, there will be a finite story end that will have told the story we intended to tell for 3 seasons.
But, yeah, I'd probably be a little bit easier on it, I think.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Although that would make our podcast less interesting because it's like, well, you can't really judge until you get to the end of it, which doesn't really suit what we're doing.
Well,
here.
I think it's unfair. I think it's fair to not say that now only because they haven't made that clear that that's what they're going to do.
Yep.
Like if they did have an end point in mind to the story, then I probably would be like, all right, I mean, I'm not loving it, but I'm waiting to see where it goes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, that's still how I am approaching it. But yeah, it's a little frustrating at times.
All right, guys. Well, if you enjoyed the conversation, there's all the social media links. There's Facebook, Twitter, Discord. You can.
I hope
join
we don't come off as just like straight up hating it, because that's not the energy that I want to get across.
No.
I don't know. It's just it's tough because it's one of those things where I really want to love it. But there is so many things going on that are just not clicking with me on like fundamental levels.
Yeah.
It's not technology stuff. It's not time setting stuff. I don't know.
I feel like our criticisms of reviewing the show actually is the most frustrating from all the shows that we do, because I feel that. It's a tough show to criticize, because when people disagree with my point, I feel they're disagreeing with my point in a way that I don't intend to be making that point.
Right.
Where I don't really care about the canon consistency
right.
stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about the science techie angles too much. I really just want sort of fundamental, solid storytelling, but the tech feeds off of the bad storytelling. It's not the fact that it exists. It's the fact that they chose to tell a story like this, and it's a bad decision in my way. Like, there is a way, I think, to use all of the stuff that they've invented for this series and have a very good story behind it. I think that's possible. They don't do that in this series. So my criticism of it is more from the fact that I'm at a point in my life where I don't watch a lot of bad TV shows, because there's so much TV and crap and to watch on Netflix and everything, that I rely at the end of the year, I go, what did all the critics think was like some of the best TV? And I watch those series, you know? So I don't watch a tremendous amount of bad TV. This is the worst show that I watch. You know what I mean? And it's not, that doesn't mean that it's a terrible show, but like on a relative scale, this is probably the worst show that I consistently watch, because everything else I'm watching is like the cream of the crop at the end of the year. And I don't watch things that are sort of get a mixed review from people.
You're such an elitist.
Who has time?
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there is so much stuff to watch. You want to make sure it's kind of like, so when I moved in, not that we need to go on this huge tangent to make this stupid metaphor I'm going to make, but when I moved into my new house in the new town that I moved into, my girlfriend and I made it a point to try as many different Chinese food places around as we could. Cause you know, you want to get good Chinese food. You want to know which one's the best one. We found the one down the street from us was great very quickly. And Chinese food is something that, you know, hopefully, you're only eating fairly infrequently because it's not the best for you. Mm-hmm. And so I found that I didn't want to try new places anymore because I was getting crappy Chinese food enough where I was like, I don't want to waste my shot on possibly shitty food.
Right. Yes.
So when I'm just going to go with the one thing, I know.
Why risk taking something that might just be either an incremental improvement at best?
Yeah. I just want to go with what I know is going to be good, even if the name of the restaurant, and this is real, is Oriental Chinese Restaurant.
They know what they're selling.
Apparently, I guess, yeah.
No, I'd agree with you. Like, it's the same thing. There's so much stuff out there. It's weird that Discovery, because I'm forced to watch it, it would just tie into the point of if this was a non, I think we might have talked about this before we started recording. If this was not branded as a Star Trek show, like if they called this The Expanse, I'm just saying The Expanse as a reason, I would probably
Those Expanse fans are going to fuck you up.
I'll call it the Veldt then, I guess. Like if they called this like Spore Network Science, I probably would not be watching it anymore. That's how I feel about the show. Like it's the Star Trek thing is the thing that continues it, but it's not good enough for me where I would have continued it independently of it being a part of this franchise, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as said before we started, I mean, just look at what the thrust of the season is. It's they're trying to find Spock. If this was a show that was not branded Star Trek and it was Michael Burnham is trying to find her brother, Chris, you would not really care.
Right. Yep. Yep. We're done. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/thepenskyfile. A couple of those a month, you get extra stuff. There's a PayPal link down below. There's some merchandise links. You can do all that stuff. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we sign off?
I don't think so. There's Comics on the Shelves by me. Night Moves number 3 just came out. If you want to check that out. Badass Podcast is there. If you want to listen to us, me and Sean Murphy talk about Batman. And we just started recording season 2. So hopefully that will be out sometime in the next 5 years. buckle in.
Which will happen first? Discovery ends or Badass season 2 comes out first?
Oh boy. That's a good question.
Even money.
Yeah. And we have t-shirts. People should buy t-shirts if they like t-shirts.
Yes. We have the Teespring store link down below. You guys can go there. They're cups and t-shirts if people are interested.
Do we want to give a tease about the new show that we have coming out soon?
Should we? Yeah. Why don't you do that? I guess that this is an appropriate episode to do that for.
Well, we're dipping our toe into the true crime field with a show called The Radio Star Murders, which is everything I just told you is false advertising for when you see what it actually is. but if you like music videos and you like people talking about music videos as though they were short films, then you're going to want to check it out.
Yeah. It's basically music and music video analysis, I guess. So it's pretty much the same tone as the Trek show and everything like that, but we're just talking about music. It's shorter. The episodes are probably like 15 to 20 minutes on average. And yeah, should be interesting. Let us know what you guys think about that, but check out the Radio Star Murders. And with that, we are done. Thank you guys very much for listening. We'll be back with DS9 on Tuesday. Sorry this one's late, but we had to adjust. We had to watch the episode multiple times and then still not remember anything about it. So we'll be back with next week with the sixth episode of Discovery. Until then, see you later.